It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Iraqi Prime Minister rejects forming emergency government, and Nigeria shopping center blast kills 19. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is reiterating U.S. calls for Iraqis to quickly form an inclusive government and avoid a power vacuum that could worsen the security situation as Sunni militants sweep across the country. VOA's Arup Handi has more from Washington.
Coming out of Wednesday's talks with NATO foreign ministers, Secretary of State John Kerry emphasized the need for the alliance to recognize and deal with the evolving threat of extremism, whether it be in Crimea or Iraq, where he says the Sunni militant group ISIL's hybrid efforts require a rethinking of strategy and intelligence gathering.
How do you have not just permanent basing in certain places, but permanent vigilance and permanent capacity to be ahead of the curve? That's what readiness really means.
In combating ISIL, Kerry says readiness means Iraqi leaders must work quickly to create a new inclusive government that will present a unified front to the militancy. Arup Handi, VOA News, Washington.
A bombing at a Nigerian shopping center killed at least 19 people and wounded 52 Wednesday. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but Islamic extremists are suspected. Initial reports say 21 people were killed by the blast at the shopping area in Abuja, which came as shoppers were getting ready to watch Nigeria's World Cup match with Argentina. One person has been arrested. Some witnesses said a person riding a motorcycle threw the bomb. Suspicion has fallen on Boko Haram, the Islamic extremist group responsible for thousands of deaths in a terror campaign to turn northern Nigeria into an Islamic state. You can follow this developing story at voanews.com. A man apparently planning to carry out a suicide bombing blew himself up at a Beirut hotel late Wednesday as Lebanese security forces were closing in on him. A second suspected would-be bomber was arrested and 10 people were injured. The Obama administration says it is ready to impose fresh sanctions on Russia if Moscow fails to take action to de-escalate the crisis in Ukraine. The White House, however, says it has delayed implementation as it presses for unified support from European and U.S. manufacturers for the measures. Speaking in Brussels, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry.
Until Russia fully makes that kind of commitment to the peace process and to the stability of Ukraine, the United States and Europe are compelled to continue to prepare greater costs, including tough economic sanctions, with the hopes that they will not have to be used. But that is dependent on the choices that Russia and its president make in the next days and weeks.
The threat of new sanctions comes as American business leaders campaign against unilateral penalties, claiming they will hurt U.S. interests and cost American jobs. A group of Palestinian prisoners of Israel has ended a long hunger strike. Robert Berger reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
About 80 Palestinian security prisoners held by Israel have ended a 63-day hunger strike that landed most of them in the hospital. The strike began on April 24th to press Israel to curb its controversial policy of administrative detention, meaning prisoners can be held without trial on suspicion of involvement in terrorist activity. The chairman of the Palestinian Prisoners Club, Kadura Faris, said a deal with Israeli prison authorities is a step in the right direction. Faris told Israel Radio the deal is not a big victory, but dialogue will continue on easing administrative detention. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
The U.S. Supreme Court has unanimously ruled police may not unusually search the cell phones of people they arrest without a search warrant. The case was brought forward by two men who felt police had violated their Fourth Amendment constitutional rights that bars unreasonable searches. In Wednesday's World Cup action, Switzerland 3-0 over Honduras, Iran fell to Bosnia-Herzegovina 3-1, and Argentina winners over Nigeria 3-2. Reporting from Washington, I'm Bill Michaels.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A shopping center bomb blast in Nigeria's capital has killed 19 and wounded 52.
When I come back, before I will come back, none of them is here again. So the place now goes to Alchis. All of them, both the banana women, all of them just dead like that.
Blessing Marta is a vendor in Nigeria's capital, Abuja. The Nigerian government has warned citizens to be on the alert following the Abuja blast. South Sudan renews its commitment not to recruit any more child soldiers. And the 23rd African Union Summit opens today in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea, with a focus on agriculture and security.
Terrorism is not just an African phenomenon, it's a global phenomenon, and we need to have that international cooperation and understanding on how to address it.
Erastu Muecha is the deputy chairman of the African Union Commission. We also get an in-depth report from Malabo. And South Africa's longest labor strike has ended, but not its impact. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian police said at least 19 people were killed and 52 injured on Wednesday when a bomb exploded outside a crowded shopping center in a high-class neighborhood of the capital. Heather Murdoch has more for VOA from Abuja.
The explosion ripped through this shopping center around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. An hour later, pools of blood were still on the streets. Blessed Marta was selling local nuts outside the market. 5 minutes before the bomb went off, her two sisters and a friend selling bananas were killed.
When I come back, before I will come back, none of them is there again. So the place now goes to Alchis. All of them, both the banana women, all of them just dead like that.
Police say they have made arrests in connection with the blast, but for now are not blaming Boko Haram, an Islamist insurgent group that has killed more than 2,000 people this year alone. Police spokesperson Frank Mabah.
It's a clear case of an explosion. The details of the nature of the explosion or the nature of the IEDs that were used are still unknown to us.
Nigeria's five-year-old insurgency is usually contained in the northeast, where three states have been under emergency rule for more than a year. But the insurgency appears to be expanding its reach and its tactics, including mass kidnappings of women and girls. After 2 years of peace in the capital, three bombings have killed more than 100 people since mid-April. Boko Haram claimed responsibility for the first bombing in Abuja this year and threatened there would be more to come. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
A spokesman for Nigeria's government has called on residents of Abuja to avoid the upscale shopping area where a bomb blast on Wednesday killed at least 19 people. Mike O'Meary says an investigation has begun to find out who carried out the attack. He says the government is urging Nigerians to report suspicious activities to security officials. O'Meary tells reporter Peter Clotty, terrorists bent on causing chaos and instability will not succeed.
So far, we cannot confirm any figure of casualties, but we will not rule that out because of the heavy concentration of businesses and people who go to do business there. But security and emergency relief have mobilized to the area, including medical services. And we just appeal to citizens to be on the alert, be watchful, and avoid the area for now because of the rescue efforts that's ongoing around there.
Has investigation begun concerning this explosion?
It has already commenced. Officials have mobilized the area and people are looking at various possibilities and angles on it.
Has the government engaged the public in terms of being aware since the ongoing World Cup? Experts are saying that malls and areas where people congregate become soft target to some of these militants to attack.
Yes, we have issued the warning, the alert, earlier on. It's an ongoing event. Even yesterday we had a security awareness program with principals of schools. We have also been campaigning the media for citizens to be more careful. We had issued the alert even before the World Cup. The venues of viewing should become more secured and people around the area generally should cooperate with local security forces around them to ensure safety of lives and avert possible incidents such as this nature. So that is ongoing. We will not stop until the entire country is fully mobilized to understand the cruelty of this act and the nature of the and desire of these people to just kill people, take delight in killing human beings. And that is not something that humans should contemplate in any form and any way at all.
Some Nigerians are expressing concern that it appears these militants who are bent on causing harm appear to be winning on the surface of it because they're creating confusion, creating panic. There's very little that is opposing what they are doing.
That is the intention of all terrorists. But for any one blast, 2-3 more, we have been averted earlier, either on a daily basis, it's been averted. It's only that the blasts come with a bang and the noise, and so it attracts everybody's attention. But the arrest and aversion of some of these blasts hardly comes with any noise because it's not bang, bang, bang.
Michael Merry is Director General of Nigeria's National Orientation Agency. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. The 23rd Summit of African Union Heads of State and Government begins today, Thursday, in the Equatorial Guinea capital of Malabo. As Sandra Nyaira of VOA Zimbabwe program reports from Malabo, the summit theme is agriculture and food security, with a focus on improving the continent's mechanized agriculture.
Food security continues to nag Africa, though experts say the continent is the most arable land, which is not being utilized at the moment. Also set for discussion is Africa's progress on Agenda 2063, the continent's guiding vision for the next 50 years, as leaders and ordinary people seek an improved and developed Africa. Many meetings are being held on the sidelines of the summit. Earlier today, a NEPAD meeting setting the agenda for the day brought high-level participants together to address challenges blocking Africa's development and growth. African Union Commission Chairperson Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma said Africa's development should be people-driven, with growth and development being one of the most important pillars. She said a united Africa can develop at a faster rate, much to the people's benefit.
Of course, women, who are the majority in agriculture, need to have access to land, and young people also need to have access to land, but also access to capital. Agricultural inputs, irrigation, infrastructure for storage, transport, but they also need to move just from agricultural products to agribusiness, agro-processing. And of course, we also need to develop the human resources that are needed in agriculture, scientists, agronomists, and so on.
Economic Commission for Africa's Executive Secretary, Carlos Lopez, also addressed the NEPAD meeting, seeking to address issues blocking the continent's growth. He also called for unity among all actors on the continent as they work towards a well-developed Africa along Agenda 2063. Kagamba Julius Sisingoma is a special assistant to the African Union's Commissioner for Rural Economy and Agriculture. He told VOA, though political will has been a problem in the past among African leaders as they sought to address problems besetting the continent, he says there is no chance that leaders will continue on that path as youthful populations and wealth trends will push them to eradicate poverty and make strong decisions that will spur growth on the continent. Sisingoma, who spoke after emerging from a high-level meeting on agriculture and food security ahead of the leaders' summit on the subject, said the continent needs to put more resources into agriculture to avert food shortages. Judges to the new African Court on Justice are also expected to be selected here. First Ladies of Africa are also meeting to discuss HIV issues and how the continent can work together to promote zero new infections and take care of those living with the HIV virus. This is Sandra Nyaira in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Partey in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 26. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. One of the topics also to be discussed at the African Union Summit, which begins today in the Equatorial Guinea capital, Malabo, is peace and security on the continent, especially in light of conflicts in South Sudan, Central African Republic, Boko Haram in Nigeria, and Al-Shabaab in Somalia and Kenya. Erastu Muecha, deputy chairman of the African Union Commission, says terrorism has added a new dimension to Africa's ongoing conflict, but Mwecha tells me terrorism is not just an African phenomenon, but rather a global threat that must be cooperatively dealt with by the entire international community.
This summit will be looking at two special items. The first one is, of course, this is a year of food and security. And the second one, of course, there are a number of international issues that are on the agenda, but also regional issues, you know, like recent security that has always been prominently on the agenda, looking at the hotspots in the continent and the progress that the continent is making in addressing the challenges that emanate from these hotspots. So it is a summit full of activities, full of issues, but of course, with the underlying theme being food and security and also agenda 2063.
It seems that every summit the African Union holds, the issue of security seems to overshadow the summit. We have the situation with Al-Shabaab and the attacks in Kenya. We have the situation of Boko Haram in Nigeria, Central African Republic. Give me an assessment of how the African Union is dealing with these flashpoints.
It's true that the issue of peace and security is taking enormous effort in the continent. And of course, it is also an evolving situation because if you look at the nature of the course of conflicts that the continent had 10 years ago, it's not exactly the same. Now we have, as you rightly mentioned, more of terrorism. But the good thing is you see more ownership, you see more commitment on the part of the leaders to turn this tide. And you see significant progress in terms of reducing the number of hotspots in the continent. But again, there is rising concern that this issue of terrorism needs to be addressed because terrorism is not just an African phenomenon, it's a global phenomenon, and we need to have that international cooperation and understanding on how to address it.
The African Union this week or so readmitted Egypt back to the Union. People are saying that was probably premature considering what's happening in Egypt. Can you tell us the justification on the readmission of Egypt?
I don't know why anybody would call it premature because the people of Egypt have elected a new president and we had international mentors coming from all over the world, including from Africa, who all gave their verdict to that the election went. And it's an expression of the people of Egypt. And of course, Egypt has finally fulfilled, of course, the condition for it to be considered to rejoin the African Union. Of course, we all know that Egypt is still got a number of challenges to be addressed, particularly in uniting the people of Egypt. But as I said, this is a process.
Erastus Mwecha is the Deputy Chairman of the African Union Commission. You are speaking with me from the Equatorial Guinea capital of Malabo. The government of South Sudan is renewing its commitment not to recruit any more children into the National Army and to free those it already has. Defense Minister Kuo Meyang Juk signed the agreement this week on behalf of the government at a ceremony in Juba. Mugumi Davis Rakarinch of VOA South Sudan in Focus program has details from Juba.
The UN Secretary General's Special Representative for Children and Armed Conflict, Leila Zerugai, and head of the Children's Agency, UNICEF in South Sudan, Jonathan Viech, witnessed the signing of the government's commitment in which the Kiir administration vowed not to recruit children, to release the child soldiers it already has, and to prevent other violations against children. Juba first signed the action plan in 2009. The agreement, which was renewed in 2012, also provides for the SPLA to work with child rights organizations to reunify demobilized children with their families and to investigate other forms of violations committed against children. South Sudanese military spokesperson Colonel Philip Aguer acknowledges the SPLA has more than 200 child soldiers.
The number that is observed to be 249 will be immediately demobilized, and we will visit those locations together with the United Nations so that they are sure that the action is being implemented.
Aguirre says the SPLA has mobilized more than 7,000 child soldiers since 2007. Dun Porter, head of communication for UNICEF in South Sudan, says the recommitment will help protect children in a country where more than 10,000 people, including children, have been killed in the past 6 months.
These include killing and maiming of children. Of course, it would be the most important one. Apart from the recruitment and use of children, sexual violence against children, attacks against schools or hospitals, denial of humanitarian access for children, and abduction of children.
Porter says a team of children protection officers will move around the country with SPLA officers to verify that there are no more children recruited into the army. Agueri says violations of the agreement will not be tolerated.
The army commander that will recruit child soldiers will be punished, and we will request civil societies and child organizations to help us in observing. Any observations reported to the SPLA will be verified and action will be taken. Already, the chief of staff have already issued a decree to punish anybody using child soldiers.
The UN says more than 9,000 children have been recruited into both sides, opposition and SPLA, since the conflict began in mid-December. And Porter says UNICEF has received assurances from the SPLM in opposition that it will abide by the agreement. For VOA News, I am Ogumedev Suruakarinj in Juba.
South African platinum mine workers began returning to work yesterday, Wednesday, after a deal was signed to end the country's longest and costliest strike lasting 5 months. As Gillian Parker reports from Marikana, South African businesses and government are struggling to find ways to cope with the impact and how to avoid such prolonged standoffs in the future.
In Marikana, there is an atmosphere of celebration and relief at the end of the strike. On January 23rd, 70,000 mine workers downed their tools, demanding higher wages and benefits. After months of stalemate, the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union, AMCU, signed a deal June 24th with the world's top platinum producers, Lonmin, Anglo American Platinum and Impala Platinum, to end the crippling action. Boyfi Magibi has been working in the mines for 20 years and says for the past 5 months he lived hand to mouth, depending on family and charities.
That 5 months you are going tough. Now I'm very happy.
Ratings agency Standard & Poor's cited the costly strike as one of the main reasons South Africa's credit rating was downgraded in May. The three-year deal gives mine workers an annual pay rise of around $94 per month for the next 3 years. This is about a 20% increase, but far less than the 100% the AMCU originally demanded. AMCU was founded in 2001 and has steadily accumulated support and political clout.
Yes!
A victory for the working class is how Union President Joseph Mathunja described the end of South Africa's most costly and longest strike. But the strike cost mining companies an estimated $2.3 billion in earnings, and producers are widely expected to restructure, which will inevitably lead to job cuts and could potentially pave the way for further walkouts. The strike has had a huge impact in the country and has led to growing calls for legal strike-breaking mechanisms to allow the courts or the state to intervene during protracted and costly strikes. Economists say something needs to change.
The way things should proceed is to the Constitutional Court. The Constitutional Court needs to produce guidelines on how to balance these rights.
A Labour economist with AdCorp, Lone Sharp, says unions in South Africa may be losing their potency despite their latest strike industry.
In the year 2013, based on official data, union membership countrywide dropped from 3.3 million to 3 million, a drop of nearly 10%. During 2013, unions lost 95 million rand in lost membership dues due to declining membership.
More trouble is on the horizon for South Africa's government and businesses. The National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa, the country's biggest union with more than 200,000 members, is threatening to down tools from July 1st, a move that would hinder the country's crucial auto industry. Gillian Parker for VOA News, Marikana.
25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. African champions Nigeria Super Eagles are the first team from the continent to qualify for the knockout stage of the competition, despite losing 3-2 to Argentina in their last Group E match in Porto Alegre on Wednesday. Bosnia-Herzegovina dismissed Iran 3-1 in the other group tie in Salvador. Consequently, Argentina topped the group. Nigeria is second, followed by Bosnia-Herzegovina, then Iran. Meanwhile, Nigeria Super Eagles coach Stephen Keshi congratulates Argentine striker and captain Lionel Messi, who turned 27 years old on Tuesday.
Happy birthday, guy. That's a great day, you know. I think my team and I wouldn't know this, but we want to wish him a very happy birthday. We want to wish him a healthy, long life. We want to wish him all his heart desire. And we will see him after the game, so we can celebrate more, you know. So congratulations, Messi.
That was Stephen Keshi, the Nigeria Super Eagles coach, speaking in Porto Alegre in Brazil. Elsewhere in Group H, attacking midfielder Serdan Sakiri became the second player to score a hat-trick at this World Cup. He propelled Switzerland to a 3-0 triumph over Honduras in the Amazon rainforest city of Manaus, while France and Ecuador played to a scoreless draw in Rio de Janeiro. Consequently, France topped the group, and with second place Switzerland advanced to the knockout stage, while third place Ecuador and fourth place Honduras go home. Still in Brazil, the group phase of the competition concludes with action in Group G and H today, Thursday. Ghana face Portugal in the capital, Brasilia, as the United States of America engage Germany in Recife. In Group H, South Korea play Belgium in Sao Paulo as Algeria tackles Russia in Curitiba. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, June 26.
The House of Assembly of Yobe have shown seriously that they are behind the Boko Haram. That they say that all the Boko Haram 486 caught in Aja State Security Agents, by Aja State Security Agents, should be released. So let the world hear that Boko Haram headquarters is in Yobe and Okuru and Bauchi. I am Ofobike Nzabu, Enugu State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A bombing at a Nigerian shopping center killed at least 19 people and wounded 52 on Wednesday. There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but Islamic extremists are suspected. Initial reports said 21 people were killed by the blast at Emma Plaza in Abuja. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has sent congratulations to Madagascar as it celebrates its first Independence Day since last year's election returned it to democracy. Kerry said he was speaking for President Barack Obama and the American people in encouraging Madagascar's newly elected leaders to govern with transparency. That's it for this Thursday, June 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping that you will have a trouble-free Thursday. But please stay tuned for International Edition next.
Do you love African music?
Music time in Africa.
Wake, 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 wake.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa, through its own music. Oh, oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.